please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee. Alan, welcome to the show.
It's a delight to be here. Appreciate it, David.
No, I appreciate you being on. Hey, you know, right now today, talent is a challenge. We know that. We know that companies are screaming for good talent. They're trying to retain talent. And part of that retention strategy has become really a emphasis on leadership development, developing the pool that they have because they're so afraid they're going to lose it to a competitor. What are some of the trends you're seeing in terms of, hey, what's going on in the marketplace, what's happening out there from a retention strategy and a leadership development role?
I think it's an excellent question to be asking ourselves. I was just taking a peek at the Gallup State of the American Workforce for 2017, so the report that came out last year, and it said that 47% of the workforce says now is a good time to search for a new job, and half the workforce intends to do so. And so I think for many organizations, not only do you have very low unemployment, but you've got people looking around going, I wonder what else is out there. In addition to that, it talks about in that same report that the number one reason why individuals leave their jobs is lack of development, which, of course, is the major role of a leader. How do I develop my people?
You know, it's interesting. As we all know, we went through the recession about 3-5 years ago at this point, though it did seem to not really pick up until about a year ago. And the reality is that people were afraid to move, were afraid to jump jobs. They were afraid to do anything because they were damn lucky they had a job, really. And now they're like, well, you know, the market's gone up. And a lot of times during that case, they didn't have any raises. This is just the reality of the marketplace. So I guess it's not a real big surprise that suddenly with a hot job market and a good economy that people are jumping.
You know, without a doubt. And what we're finding is that just as been true with other cycles before, people are jumping not necessarily for incentives and for, well, as some theorists would call it, satisfiers or dissatisfiers in the workplace. They're really jumping to cultures. They're jumping to organizations where they can learn, where they can develop, where they find the culture to be satisfying from a development standpoint. And so that's where I think as leaders, that's where our focus has to be laser tight on how am I developing my people, how am I creating that culture within the organization that's not only going to retain my current workforce but be like a magnet drawing in other talent into the organization.
You know, you're spot on, Alan. About a month or so ago, you had United Airlines talking about switching company bonuses to a lottery system. You have organizations looking at how they can try to, you know, provide different incentives to retain talent. But at the end of the day, most employees don't respond to that. They respond to development of themselves. If you look at all the research having to do with millennials, who are now over 50% of the workforce, and by 2020, my estimates show they're going to be like 70% of the workforce.
Yep.
They want to be developed. They want companies to invest in them. They want a caring leader who looks after them, and care not meaning, obviously, as you know, somebody who coddles them, but actually challenges them.
Yep.
What are you seeing in terms of the marketplace of what organizations are starting to do to address this issue?
Well, I think the critical part, that link that we're discussing, is between what the leader does in terms of developing their people, which is exactly what you just mentioned, which is the coaching and the feedback. Most people today, in fact, again, back to Gallup, State of the American Workforce, and then also Burson's report from last year, very few employees say that their manager gives them relevant coaching or feedback on their performance on the job. In fact, in many companies, in fact, I was just in a major manufacturer here in Tennessee the other day, and they said that coaching is viewed negatively. In other words, people only get coaching when they've done something wrong. But what we're finding is it should be exactly the opposite. It should be coaching should be a daily activity of the leader. How can I help this person be an even better version of themselves? And then in those environments is when people thrive.
You know, leaders, managers, supervisors have a tough role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably even tougher today. And you know, it's an interesting issue that we need these challenges to be solved, but we have not historically trained or developed the leader themselves to make that happen, right?
You know, when we're working with our customers, you know, that phrase that you tend to lead in the way that you've been led, you know, it's very similar to you tend to parent in the way that you've been parented, right? And I think many of us, I've got a 21-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old daughter, and from time to time, my father comes out of my mouth. I'm not sure if you've had that experience before.
Yeah. I would never do, right? Swear I would never do that.
I used to hate it when he said, and then all of a sudden, here you go.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Yeah.
And it's just almost by habit we do these things. And so as leaders, we tend to lead the way that we've been led. And in an environment where that coaching and feedback wasn't as necessary, maybe our leaders haven't shown us how to do that. And so companies are saying, show us how. You know, how can we as leaders really help guide our people into another level of performance without the, hey, do better? You know, it's kind of that old analogy I heard once where, you know, people are going to the bowling alley and there's a big curtain halfway down the lane, and you're standing next to your coach and you roll the ball, it goes under the curtain, you hear some smacking and some noise on the other side, and the coach kind of leans over the curtain, leans back to you and says, okay, you need to do better. I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm just rolling the ball. I don't know where it's happening. And so we say, do better. We need you to perform at a higher level, but it's not helpful, you know, unless there's some more specific insight, there's some more specific coaching to help that person get there.
We're talking with Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And we're talking about modern leadership development. You know, it's interesting. There's so many definitions of leadership development. What is the definition you specifically use, or how do you explain to an organization what leadership development really should be?
From my perspective, a leadership is in two aspects. One is it's helping people get to a place where they couldn't or wouldn't go on their own. And so I think of it, again, we've been talking a lot about coaching. It's like a coach, right? A coach being, you know, the origin of the word is, you know, like a coach, a stage coach, a coach like a bus. It takes people to places where they wouldn't or couldn't get to on their own. So that's what a leader does. He takes people to places where they wouldn't or couldn't go to on their own. Now, in order to make that happen, you have to have a belief system. And from my perspective, the belief system of the leader is that when my people are at their best, it's extraordinary, the results that we can get, both for them personally and professionally. And so if I help my people be at their best, we're going to go places where we couldn't or wouldn't go without that leadership.
How long have you been working with the Dale Carnegie system?
I've been with Dale Carnegie for 23 years. Started out in Colorado 1994, and moved to Tennessee about 17 years ago.
Only 17 years ago?
Only 17 years ago. It's amazing how fast the time goes.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? You know, it just seems like, poof, it's done. It's truly amazing. As we watch children grow up, we say the same thing, don't we? It's the same exact language we use.
Well, tonight I am taking my youngest to her high school orientation. And it reminded me of a saying that I heard once that, you know, when your first child goes to kindergarten, you can't believe how old they are. And then when your last one goes to high school, you can't believe how old you are.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. And my producer, Debbie Davis, is shaking her head the same thing. Yep, very true. Very true. Well, you know, we're talking about leadership development. And as you know, this starts at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have buy-in from the C-suite. How do you get the C-suite to understand the ROI of leadership development? Because I got to tell you, that is always one of the biggest challenges, especially when a CFO goes, how much is this going to cost and what's my ROI?
It's the number one factor that executives look for in training and development. I remember I was sitting down with a customer, this is a few years back, and he simply looked me in the eye. This was after a previous recession, not the last one, but a previous recession. And he said, Alan, we're not doing training for the fun of it anymore. You know, my people have lots to do. And we're only going to do training if it provides a value back to the organization. Josh Burson, who writes a lot for Deloitte, said that the net promoter score of a lot of training environments is -8. In other words, from executives' perspectives, it is a cost, exactly like you mentioned. And so to transition that to a return on that investment is a critical function. And for us, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's different ways in which we rate training. You know, did you like what you were involved in? Were you able to apply the skill sets into the environment? There's whole systems in place to do that. My experience has been that most CEOs and C-suites are only really interested in one thing. Based off of the development that my people are going through, what metric is going to move that I care about? And is that metric, as we talked about before, retention or turnover? Is that metric productivity or efficiency? Is that metric safety? Or is it some sort of revenue increase or cost reduction? But for the C-suite, they're looking at metrics almost every day or every week, and you have to tie the development of our people into those metrics. And if you can tie that, then it's an investment that's ridiculous return to the organization. If we can't tie it together, then it's something nice to do, but not necessarily necessary.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, there is this question that C-suite asks, and it's absolutely viable. The question of, so how much time and effort is this going to take?
I think that there's two theories out there in learning today. There's micro-learning and macro-learning. And the idea of micro-learning is, hey, we can get it real quick. We can watch a YouTube video. We can look a little 2-minute vignette. And because of how busy we are today, organizations are drawn to utilizing those kind of development tools because it's quick, it's fast, people can get it, and then they can go. The challenge is that you can't get mastery in that environment. You can only be reminded of what you already know. So, for instance, if I'm trying to wire an outlet in my house, I've got some basic electrical knowledge from high school and just from life. I could watch a YouTube video and make sure I didn't kill myself when I was trying to rewire that outlet. On the other hand, if I decide I want to learn to play the oboe, I'm not going to do that on a YouTube video. I'm just not. And so I think that the micro-learning is helpful to remind us of things that we know, but it takes mastery of these skill sets to really develop, and that takes time. It's nowhere else in life do we think that you can just pick something up by absorbing it. It takes time to learn these kind of skill sets. And so I think it's interesting you asked the question, David, because we're seeing almost a reverse trend with our customers in this way. They're not interested in quick fixes anymore. They realize quick fixes don't work. They've all sent their people off to one-day seminars, and they come back, and they're excited for a couple of days, and they look at the numbers at the end of the month, and nothing has changed. And so they're saying, that's not working. Let's invest long-term in our people. So the idea of having, we've been doing a lot of academies where people go through a developmental process over a period of time. And as those numbers start to shift and change, organizations are saying that's an investment worth making.
No, you're absolutely right. That does seem to be the trend. And the reason for that, as you said, is pretty clear. It's that the other hasn't worked. And, you know, it's interesting. We all have gone to conferences. We've all gone to, you know, trainings that you go out and you do have a day event and you rah-rah up. You might walk on coals. You might do all sorts of crazy fun things. And I'm not saying they're not fun, by the way. In no way am I not implying that you're not going to have a good experience, because you are going to have an experience. But the lasting effect is the challenge, isn't it?
I was just thinking as you were talking through that, David, how many planes I've been on where I've taken my notes from whatever conference and I'm writing my to-dos and I've got a page or two of things that are going to be different now that I've gone through this particular conference and I've gotten all this information that I'm excited about. And, you know, I hit the ground running that first day. I pop into the office and it's chaos. I mean, there's I've been out for a couple of days. People need to see me. You know, I'm trying to catch up on all the emails and things that are going on. And before you know it, you find that list somewhere on your desk. Or maybe it's on your credenza and you're looking and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that conference I went to. That was fun. That was, you know, it was you had some good food and the speaker was funny. And I think maybe I got an idea. And so intuitively we think that's a good thing to do, but then we're like, I don't know what I really learned. I was speaking with the CEO of a Fortune 500 company here in Nashville yesterday. We were having coffee, and he's just been promoted to be CEO of the organization. And he was telling me about a Dale Carnegie experience that he had had in 1989. And he was saying to me, he said, of all the things I've been through, you know, that one was nearly 30 years ago, and it still sticks with me today. And the reason it stuck with him is because it wasn't just a one-off, right? It was an experience and a process that he went through to attain a higher level of skill and development. And so in reflecting back, I think that's where we do when we look back in our lives. We look at these experiences that weren't just flash in the pans, but things that were a process we went through. Then we think that's what makes a difference upon reflection, not just the touchy-feely things that we get to and we feel great, and those are probably good, but I can feel great going to the movies too, and it's far less expensive.
No, you're exactly right. And we're talking with Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today our guest is Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee, and we're talking about leadership development in the modern day. Yeah, it's, you know, Alan, I got to tell you, in our first segment, we kind of talked about that senior level leadership, right, that executive level, how important it is, and kind of why it's so critical. I'd like a little bit to talk about, you know, at the leader level, at the manager, the supervisor level, now that you have buy-in, you know, what type of programs really work to develop a leader? I mean, we know it's important, and we know that leadership is hard, and we know that, let's be honest, the supervisor and the managers do the work. All right? Yeah. They're the day-to-day players that make it happen each and every day. And I don't care if you're in the medical field, I don't care if you're in manufacturing. Doesn't matter. This is the day-to-day grinding it out. You know, team leads that really go out there and make it happen. What is some modern-day solutions to this type of training and why it works?
Yeah, as you were discussing that level in the organization, it's one of the hardest jobs when you're in a frontline supervisory leadership level, because often you've been promoted from within, and so you were good at whatever you were doing, and then they say, hey, you're really good at that. Why don't you lead people to do that? And leading people to do it and doing it can be very different things, very different skill sets. And so it becomes frustrated, right, because you're sitting there and you're with your team and something needs to get done, and the temptation is so strong just to do it yourself because it's faster and it's easier. And your people pick up on that in a heartbeat that you'll do it. And then you end up you become the super doer, not the supervisor in the organization. We're working currently with a manufacturing organization, 130 team leads because of economic factors and so forth, haven't really had any development. And the company said, we have got to help that level. And so how do they transition from doing to leading others? How do they become better coaches? How do they learn the skill set of leadership and the attitude of leadership? Because both are important. I've got to have confidence as a leader. And that being said, once I'm confident, I've got to know what to do as a leader. So matching both those things together can be quite powerful. It was interesting. We were facilitating a session for them last week, and it was almost like relief. We were discussing a concept around how we give feedback to our people, and the relief on their faces when they said, oh, that's far easier than I thought it would be, just to give feedback with insight and how I can, oh, that sounds way easier than what I was doing. And so people are hungry for that kind of opportunity.
I was thinking as you were speaking about team leaders, right? Individuals that really develop their team and move them forward doing a task or doing a project or doing whatever that is. And you're right. Historically, they have been really good individual contributors to the organization and have suddenly become managers. And as we all know, sometimes that's not the best solution to the problem, but that's the reality of what companies do, right? I mean, that's just the reality of it. And I was thinking to myself that, you know, sometimes it's developing the person and sometimes it's developing the team. What's the right answer on that? Or is there a better choice? Or is it congruent to make that happen?
I think it's developing the person within the team. It's an and conversation. Cultures are very strong. What is the old saying, that culture eats strategy for lunch or breakfast or dinner, or it eats it, right? And so what we have found is that if I have an individual that comes through a developmental experience, we can get tremendous results, and they go right back into the culture, and it forces them back into previous behaviors. And so the training then becomes not an investment in that person, or that person leaves. Because that culture now is not supporting the learning that the person has participated in. We were working with a medical firm here in Nashville, and they were going through our leadership training for managers course, and they had a younger set of leaders. We talked about millennials before. They're moving into leadership, and a younger set of leaders, and they were going through our leadership training for managers course, and the conversation kept coming back to, yes, but, like, this is what we want to have in the organization, but the senior leader, but the, you know, and so what they found is that when they all went together, they had enough critical mass to make a difference in the culture of the organization and then shift those results forward. So you have to focus with the individuals, but within the culture, so the team as well needs to participate in that environment.
Do you recommend that the leader or the manager lets their team know they're taking training? I know I've been asked that question many times, and some leaders are almost like, oh, don't tell them, don't let them, you know, then they'll, you know, oh, and it, I mean, talk to me about the psychological impact of training and development, because then people go, oh, you're just, you know, you're just trying that stuff out on me. You know, that those things are real in the workplace.
I think of it along two lines. One is, if there's something I really want to be better at, it's helpful if I tell others that I want to be better at it, because then they hold me accountable for it. For instance, if I want to walk into the house every day with a smile and energy, regardless of how the day has gone, so I, you know, I greet my family, if I tell them I'm working on that, they'll hold me accountable to it in a heartbeat, and they'll let me know when I'm not. And so as a leader, if I'm serious about taking myself to another level, why not tell my team, this is what I'm focusing on, and this is why I think this is the right way to do it. The accountability goes up tremendously. There's no excuses at that point. And then, frankly, the other reason would be, as my people see a shift in my performance and a shift in the results that we're getting, then they're going to be excited about development too, right? Then they're going to be like, hey, what about me? You know, how can I be better? So I think leaders lead the way. And so I definitely would let people know that, hey, this is the direction I'm headed. Hold me accountable for it.
When you're asking a leader to take that energy or that challenge on, right, to develop, the mindset is critical that they have, right? We talk sometimes about hostages, right, in classes,
yeah.
Right? And I really don't have a problem, but it's them. But fine, you're making me take the course, fine. Right? Talk to me a little bit about that mindset and how you can shift it, or what would make somebody want to shift that.
I heard a saying once that you cannot motivate anybody, and yet everybody is motivated for some reason. And so I think, because we're all inherently self-interested, what is it that person is wanting? And there has to be a frustration or a challenge or an opportunity or a result that they're looking for. And I think as soon as people see results, things shift. We were working with physicians in one of our courses. And you talk about a group who thinks they have all the answers. I mean, it's physicians, right?
They've been
trained their entire life to have answers. And so we walk into a conversation with them about human relations and bedside manner and kind of how they're interacting with their team. And I tell you what, they were not interested in getting any information. But I appealed to the idea of, okay, let's at least do an experiment. Like, y'all are scientists, so let's at least do an experiment of, let's try these behaviors and evaluate the results. So let's not judge. Let's just attempt the behaviors and then try the results. And sure enough, they came back the next week, and they're like, it works. And the thing that was so interesting is, once they figured out that it works, they were all in. All in. They were ready to go. And so I think if we move past that mindset of, I'm going to judge this, just say, I'm going to do this, and then measure the results, and if the results work out, I'll do it. And if it doesn't work out, that's fine. But we at least did it. And that's the bargain that we try to get with the folks that come into our sessions. If they are that mindset that you're discussing, say, not judge yet, let's do it, measure the results, then we can make a judgment as to whether or not you're going to include this in your patterns moving forward.
That all-in attitude that you're talking about is so critical for not only the individual, but for the organization. Tell me a little bit about when you're talking to a leader or you're talking to a manager, and if that person is on the fence, how do you get them to understand that value of all-in?
So right now, it's hard to see on the radio, but there's a beach ball just kind of spinning on my forehead right now as I consider that question. How do you get a leader all in if they're not all in? The way that we judge the formula is this, that if I'm trying to get results, then two things have to happen. A behavior has to change and a mindset has to change. You can't have results without both of those, a mindset and a behavior. If I just change my mindset, I feel better, but nothing happens. If I just try behaviors without changing my mindset, it comes across as manipulative or insincere. And so, again, I don't get the results. But if I change my mindset and beliefs and then change my behaviors, then I get results. And so when we work primarily with organizations, and for us, David, it is an organizational decision around results. What results, strategic initiatives, or goals are we driving this year? And how, through the development of our people, can we get there faster than we would otherwise? And as soon as we can connect the development of people to those outcomes that the business leader is looking for, that shifts the mindset, and then they're like, what do we need to do to make that happen? So for me, it's that formula. It's the mindset and beliefs plus the behaviors that then are going to equal the results, but you start with results. What results are we looking for? Then let's look and see how we get there.
So, Alan, you talked about the Leadership Training for Management course that you had mentioned during mm-hmm. the segment. Tell the audience a little bit about what that course is.
Sure. The Leadership Training for Managers is really the blueprint or the guidebook for leaders today to accomplish many of the things that we've been discussing so far on the Power Hour. It really delves into five major, what we call drivers for results for leaders today. The first one is self-direction, right? I have to know where I'm going and my intentionality of getting there as a leader, because frankly, many leaders today are reactionary. I go to work and I start reacting to things versus responding and being in control of my time and the direction. So if you leave work at the end of the day and you're just exhausted, it's likely because your business is running you. You're not running the business, to use a Michael Gerber quote. The second area is involved with people. My ability to work with and through people in the organization become critical because, frankly, everybody isn't my personality. They're not my style. If I'm leading, that means I'm leading people who are diverse. They have different experiences. They have different backgrounds, different motivations. And as a leader, I have to be attuned to the people side of results. With that, then I have to have processes, getting there intentionally, the ability to have systems in place so that it occurs whether or not I'm pulling the switches. You see some leaders that are basically, if you remember that old one-man band, you know, the dude with the cymbals and with the drum and with the harmonica, and they're making all the music themselves. And you see, you know, leaders like that that are trying to do it all themselves. There's no system or process in place. And so how do I get the process skills to make that happen? The fourth driver is communication. How do we communicate information flow through the organization, get motivation, and get people on track so that everybody knows what to do and when to do it? And then the final piece of it is just accountability, having an accountable organization. This is my belief, is that people like to be held accountable when it's done the right way. The way I think about it is my daughters did recreational soccer growing up, and you know, recreational soccer, at least in the South, is where they don't keep score. Or the way I would say it is that the referee wasn't keeping score, but everybody else seemed to know what the score was. I mean, we all like to know what the score is, and so we'd like to be held accountable. How do we do that in a positive way in the organization? So providing self-direction, the ability to work through and with my people, my process so it has to happen systematically without me pulling all the levers and switches, the communication flow, and then finally, how do we have an accountable organization where results matter?
We're talking with Alan Walker. He's the president of Dale Carnegie in Tennessee. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, general manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Our guest today is Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee, and he's talking about leadership development in the modern era. You know, I got to tell you, Alan, leadership development, for all its terminology, for all of its, you know, whatever you call it, it really hasn't changed a lot, other than the fact that people now seem to need it more than ever.
Mm. Yeah. As we work in and with organizations, it becomes a critical set. It was interesting. I was looking up, Ebbinghaus was a psychologist back in the 1800s, and even back then he was talking about how development needs to take place over time because we forget things, you know, all the time. That's, you know, we hear something, we think that's a really great idea, then we forget it, and we have to be reminded, you know, of these things, which is, of course, one reason why we do our courses over a period of time, is that it allows people to forge a habit. But it's, you know, leadership development isn't a one and done for any organization or any person. It's a constant look at how I continually develop. It's just like any other organism. If we're not growing, we're dying. And as leaders, we have to constantly be growing.
I want to talk about digital learning. And because there is digital learning that is recorded, and there's digital learning, as you said, online, and there's little vignettes, and there's all sorts of new digital learning out there. Yeah. How can you integrate digital learning into an effective leadership program without making it just that somebody's watching a tape?
Mm. Well, there's nothing more fun than just to watch a tape, right? I mean, we've all been on those webinars where it's click, 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 let me eat lunch and let me clean off my desk and let me do my taxes while I'm watching this webinar. And who are we kidding? We're not learning anything. We're just checking a box. And unfortunately, that's where the challenge has been with webinars and digital learning, is that people are just checking a box and we're not actually learning. Because, as we just talked about, the human brain hasn't changed. We are who we are, and we know that in order to learn, you have to have an attitude of growth. You have to get content that's relevant. We have to practice that and be coached and then be held accountable for the new behavior. And without that system, we're just kidding ourselves. And so, you know, back to what we were talking about earlier, there are some places for micro-learning, videos, vignettes, asynchronous tapes that people can listen to that remind us of things. But if we want to have mastery over items, then that has to occur over a period of time. Now, how do you do that in a digital world? One of the things that we're really working with our clients on is virtual classroom spaces where we pull leaders from across the country, in some cases across the globe, into a virtual classroom. And we do a lot of the systems that work in terms of learning, but we just do it online. We were working with one of our clients last week. They had individuals on from Canada, from the U.S., from Japan, from Mexico, and they were all pulled into this digital space together to walk through this leadership development content where they could be coached, where they could work. That works. That helps people take it to another level. Otherwise, without that type of interaction, we're just kidding ourselves in terms of learning.
Yeah, it is. It is it's an enhancement to the learning, as far as I'm concerned, right? It's something that is an addition to time-spaced learning, because, as you said, it just requires a different thought process, and you need to be able to still be engaged in it, right, in terms of making that happen.
Back to what we talked about earlier, how many of us would say, you know, I want to learn the oboe, or I want to learn the guitar, or I want to operate heavy machinery, and I'm going to watch a video to do it. Or sometimes I ask my clients, we were, work with a lot of manufacturing, and said, how many of you would let a new employee watch a video about your press and then just let them go out and start operating it? And, of course, the safety guys in particular, their eyes dilate, and they're like, there's no way we would do that. And I said, okay, well, why would you let somebody watch a video about leadership and then have them go out and lead people?
That's a great analogy, right? I mean, that's just a great analogy. And actually, I think a real takeaway for leaders, that when they think about development and why video training just is not as effective.
Mm-mm.
You've been running an organization for a while now, right, in terms of the Dale Carnegie in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And you've had a lot of success, especially I know that, you know, I saw you at a conference there just, what was it, in December, I think it was. Charleston, South Carolina. Yeah, it's pretty good, huh? Charleston, South Carolina. We went down there and hit some red atoms. Okay, never mind. We'll just let that be. Got to have some fun. Got to have some fun. For all those of you in Charleston, I love the city. So I say that with respect.
So, oh, beautiful. Have the shrimp and grits.
Yeah, the shrimp and grits. That's exactly right. Or in this case, I think we had ribs or something. It was really good. Anyways, yeah, bottom line. You personally deal as a leader with your team.
Yeah.
Talk about how, or give us an example, tell us a story about how you've developed as a leader with your team and how you're getting success out of your team because of it.
We have had a remarkable run with Dale Carnegie Training of Tennessee. We've won several awards in terms of growth, cumulative growth, over the period of several years. And for me, I think it comes down to just a few fundamentals, one being being authentic and being accountable. So, you know, back to the conference that you mentioned, our team, we went through a significant growth year before last. And, you know, our team wanted to go again. I mean, they said, hey, we want to set a high goal. And I was a little nervous as a leader because, you know, we want to hit goals. And at the same time, I don't want to make it unattainable. But the team said we could do it. And I said, okay, fine. I said, this is what we'll do. I've got a lot of Scottish background. In fact, my grandfather was Clan Cummings, and so I told the team, I said, if you reach that goal, I will wear a kilt to our banquet for Dale Carnegie Convention back in December. And they got pretty excited. In fact, they put a picture of a kilt up on our wall, and they would color it in, you know, as we got closer and closer to the goal. And sure enough, they hit it, and so I had to go get a kilt and wear a kilt, and you know, it's quite comfy. Frankly, I was pleasantly surprised at how comfortable that kilt was. But to me, it's about the leadership: is how do I be authentic with my people? How do I hold them accountable for results, and then have fun, right? Because my millennials, they got all excited about that particular kilt. So we had a good time with it.
Well, you know, as somebody who saw you in that kilt, you know, you should be proud. All right? That's all I have to say. Be proud of that, right? It was very well done. Matter of fact, I have on my phone a picture of the kilt. Maybe we'll put the picture of you and me in that picture up on the HR Power Hour site so people can see that. Yeah, I think that would be a great site to do that, or maybe we won't. So
if you want to disturb yourself, although I do say that I was blessed with very good Scottish calves.
Yeah, so yeah, that's exactly right. It's one of those priceless moments, right? And I know, look, the reality is your team rose to the challenge, and it wasn't just because you were going to wear a kilt, right? You spent the time in development with them, and how did you keep them motivated? I mean, in a very serious question, how do you keep people excited for a full year? That's a real challenge.
We just came off of a two-day training internally with our team, and the idea was, okay, we've done trainings before. How do we make this something that's fun? It's halfway through our fiscal year, and so we decided to play off The Amazing Race, you know, the show that's on CBS. And so we got a bunch of Amazing Race gear from CBS online store, and we went through different challenges, and they raced as teams, and we had different checkpoints and roadblocks, and it made the training and the learning fun. And because of that, we also were able to coach at a really good level with our team members, because it was also an environment to where, hey, we're all getting better. And so because we knew we knew our accountability numbers, we knew that we needed to be better, we made it fun to be better, and now the team's on fire this week, excited about the next set of goals that we can accomplish. And so it's like anything else, it's a continual touch of the ball, right? You're continually spinning the ball, spinning the flywheel, whatever analogy that you want to use. You're constantly working with your team members to make it happen. And that's where I think you keep them engaged through the entire process, not just, you know, on a quarterly basis or at the end of the year, we unveil the score and say, well, we made it or we didn't. It's an ongoing conversation.
And I think that's a critical piece, right? constant communication, constant feedback, good or bad, I think is just as important, right? They got to know when it's not hitting the mark, just as importantly as when they are hitting the mark.
Oh, I tell my daughter, I said, you know, the thing about a cat box is that if you leave it alone, it doesn't get better. Sometimes you just got to grab a scoop and start scooping. And same thing is true with our people. If we leave something alone, it rarely gets better.
I have no response for the cat box analogy, but you know, other than I'm random. Thinking to myself, okay, there's so much truth in that analogy that we're going to go to the commercial break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, a News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're talking with Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie of Tennessee. Alan, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been a really good discussion about leadership development in the modern era. You know, what are two or three takeaways from today's show? If somebody came in halfway through and they're like, hey, I don't have time right this second to go back to hrpowerhour.com and listen, but they want to get the gist of what today's about and the takeaways that they could go out and do right now to think about to improve leadership development in their organization as an HR professional or business leader, what are those two or three takeaways?
I would say, number one, development is the most important competitive factor for businesses today. How I'm developing my people. And let me adapt a Zig Ziglar quote. Some people say development doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. So how am I daily helping my people get better, and how am I getting better with what I do? So that would be number one. Number two, the leader is the person that can set the mood of the organization. So a good quote by Daniel Goleman says, the mood of the leader is like a rock in the pond. People will follow, and what we do ripples out through the organization. So if development is critical as a leader, I got to develop myself. I've got to constantly getting better with what I do. And if I hold myself accountable for that, then my organization will perform.
Those are two great examples of what leaders can do today. And I would just add one thing. It takes the mind shift to understand how critical it is for the organization, and CEOs and leaders and HR professionals, you got to come to the plate and you got to make the decision to invest in your team, invest in your people. It's too critical today from a talent retention standpoint, to not do this is really detrimental to your business today. There's just no question about that. You know,
how else are you going to drive results?
No, how else are you going to drive results? So, you know, I know you've come up to the great state of Maine. We were kind of talking about off air about coming up to Algonquin and to the to Orweed Restaurant. I know that's local promotion.
Yeah.
You know, so what brought you to Maine? What got you up here initially?
My wife had been asking for years for me to take her to Maine. She went as a teenager and fell in love with the shore and fell in love with Maine, and so we finally made it up there a couple of years ago. I went to the Orweed, had some famous blueberry pie and steamers, and just fell in love with the shore and fell in love with Maine, and so it's a constant question that she has. When are we going back? When are we going back? Because she's thinking about that blueberry pie, I think is what she's thinking.
Well, you can tell her Orweed opens usually around May. So we should talk about that for like June-ish or something, right? Come on up.
Sounds like a beautiful time.
We usually go down there about once a month or once every 6 weeks. Love the area. You know, it's and of course the lobster is amazing, right? It's just what it is. You know, I know Tennessee pretty well. I've been down in that area before. What's it famous for?
Well, in Tennessee, you're talking Nashville, and if you're talking Nashville, you're talking live music. And so to walk up and down Broadway in downtown Nashville and listen to all kinds of live music, have some great barbecue, and then depending on the season, roll right into Bridgestone Arena and watch our Nashville Predators play. It's just a beautiful, beautiful day.
No, it must be. You know, I appreciate you being on the show today. Great information, great takeaways. Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie in Tennessee, thank you for being our guest.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Unlike most legal situations, aggrieved employees cannot sue an employer directly in court. Hi, I'm Ben Ford from Verrill Dana's Labor and Employment Group. If someone doesn't pay your bill or trespasses on your property, you can take them directly to court. In fact, for small claims, you can be in court and in front of a judge within a matter of weeks. But employment discrimination law is different. Title VII forms the backbone of most anti-discrimination law in the United States. Back in the 1960s, Congress was worried about a massive influx of lawsuits flooding the courts. So they included a requirement that in order to seek most kinds of damages, aggrieved employees must first bring their claim to a government agency and give that agency a chance to mediate or adjudicate a solution. That law endures today. Most employment discrimination cases begin as agency actions filed in either the Maine Human Rights Commission or the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal equivalent. If the agency cannot resolve the matter in 180 days, the aggrieved person may request a 180-day right to sue letter, which allows them to file a complaint in court. Commission complaints, or what we call charges, are extremely important. Unless you are a very experienced HR professional, these are not something you are going to want to handle yourself. If you have received a charge of discrimination from the EEOC or any other state agency, give Verrill Dana a call.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.